Okay, if there are no other objections, we'd like to begin the regular business meeting. And as is our custom, we'll begin with public comment. Ms. McMenemy is here to speak on behalf of the Transit Association, I believe. Okay, welcome.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Linda McMenemy, I'm the Executive Director of the Virginia Transit Association. And I want to just let you know that our members, our transit systems who are delivering service every day, have been watching with great interest and concern what's happening with the revenue situation in the state. And we really appreciate the hard work that you are putting into addressing the situation. And we've worked with you as you make very difficult choices as we go forward. We also want to let you know that we appreciate the sustainability policy that you all passed recently, because you identified transit and maintaining transit and transit assets as a priority. And we think that's particularly important at this time in the life of our state. And it may be maintaining transit may be one of the most important things that you do at this particular moment. As you know, transit ridership is really at an all-time high. We're very pleased that more and more people are getting on the bus, getting on the train, van pooling, and ride sharing. And that has so many benefits for our state. This fall quarter, we had 5.2 million people taking trips on transit. That's an 11% increase over the same quarter last year. So despite the fact that oil prices or gas prices have gone down just a little bit, people are continuing to ride transit and ride at even higher levels. That's the great news for our industry and for our state, but the challenge is meeting that increased demand. Putting that additional service out, having the drivers and the buses to carry folks. And we know that this is increasingly important in a economic downturn that we're having right now. More and more people are looking not only to save fuel, and they can save about 233 gallons a year if they make transit their other car or their only car, but they can save a significant amount of money just immediately by taking the bus or the train to work. And I'd like to just remind you of what that amount is, because I think this has a lot of impact or implications for our economy. The American Public Transportation Association looked into this and determined that the average family can save between $6,200 and $9,000 a year by, once again, taking the bus to work, making transit their primary vehicle or their other car. And, of course, the difference in that, those numbers, depends on what the price of fuel is at any given moment. $9,000 savings was, when gas was up at $4 a gallon, and we may be back there very soon. But I think this is very important, because for all of our households, they're able to redirect that spending to perhaps to their mortgage, to their health care needs, to educating their kids. You could send your child to a Virginia university for that amount for the year. That's more than most households spend on food for the entire year. So allowing people to take transit and keep their money and redirect it to other very important purposes in their life is, I think, really critical, especially during this time of an economic downturn. Additionally, and let me just say, the services out there right now for folks who depend on this to get to their job. Most of the people who are taking transit are getting to work. Many others are getting to the doctor, or transit's critical to them maintaining an independent lifestyle if they're elderly or disabled, and not going into an institutional setting. So providing, maintaining that transit service, even expanding transit service, really has a critical role in our economy today. I also have passed out, or I guess you will have passed out to you, this information by the American Public Transportation Association on the relevance of public transportation to conserving energy and reducing greenhouse gases. We've been following with interest, as I know you have, the Climate Change Commission, and transit is a very important component that the Commission is relying on to help reduce greenhouse gases in Virginia. And transportation is plays a key role there. Transit, for those families who take transit to work, the individuals can save 20 pounds of CO2 a day, 4,800 pounds a year. And it's the most effective thing that you could do immediately. It's more effective, and there's a little chart in your handout here, which I think is very illuminating, right here. It shows that taking the bus is more significant than adjusting the thermostat in your home, winterizing your home, replacing your light bulbs, and replacing an old refrigerator with an Energy Star refrigerator. It's more effective than all of those things combined. And we know that climate change is an issue that we have to address as individuals in the state and as a state. So I would say it's in a very important service right now. We have more and more people coming and asking for transit. Our systems are having to begin to turn away requests for additional service. About a third of them at least, more like 80% are saying that they're at capacity for many routes that they have. So we just don't want to be leaving people at the curb at a critical time in our economic and other histories. So we ask you to, we know that you have difficult choices ahead of you, but we ask you to keep this in mind as you look at the six-year plan. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. McMinnery. Does anybody else want to address the board under citizen's time? Mr. Chase, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I'm Bob Chase. I'm the president of the Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance. In a short while, you will discuss and likely approve designation of Route 15 as an All-American Road, and the Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance has long championed protecting this historic roadway. One of Virginia's most distinguished environmentalists and historic preservationists also championed this cause. His name was B. Powell Harrison, and he was the founder of the Piedmont Environmental Council. Mr. Harrison recognized that the only way to truly preserve Route 15 and its historic properties in Northern Virginia was to construct an alternative parkway to the east to divert mounting volumes of commercial and private vehicles. And for advocating this obvious solution, Mr. Harrison was essentially drummed out of the organization that he founded, proving once again that no good deed or idea goes unpunished.
Could you repeat that last line?
State, federal, and regional studies have documented the need for a Route 15 alternative in Northern Virginia. In 1998, the Commonwealth Transportation Board endorsed the Western Regional Bypass MIS for this purpose. A recent study commissioned by the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors as part of the county's countywide transportation plan update found creating a new corridor east of US 15 north of Leesburg with a new Potomac Bridge east of Point of Rocks not only provided a safer alternative, but when coupled with a similar realignment of Route 9 west of historic Hillsboro, dramatically reduced future traffic congestion in western Loudoun. And there's a map in the back of my statement that shows these alternatives. Loudoun supervisors summarily dismissed these findings and ordered any reference to these alternative corridors stricken from the county's transportation plan, thus proving that well-documented solutions are no match for political expediency and parochialism. The point is that Route 15 is a state responsibility, and if it is to remain a historic byway, the Commonwealth needs to be championing preservation of an alternative right-of-way for this as well as other critical corridors throughout the Commonwealth. The Alliance recognizes these are difficult times. Commissioner Eckern is trying to figure out simply how to pay for plowing roads. Mr. Tucker is simply trying to find out how to maintain and perhaps even purchase a few new buses. But Virginia's transportation policy also needs to look beyond the present at the future that is fast approaching. In the past 7 years, 75% of the 275,000 new Northern Virginia residents have located in Loudoun and Prince William counties without a Western corridor or any U.S. 15 alternative. And in the next 20 to 25 years, most of Northern Virginia's projected 1 million new residents will live well beyond the Capitol Beltway. Add to that the hundreds of thousands who will also locate in more distant Virginia, Maryland, and West Virginia communities, and the need for the Commonwealth to be more aggressive in protecting additional transportation corridors is quite apparent. Route 15 served Northern Virginia reasonably well in the 18th and 19th centuries and most of the 20th. However, it will not meet 21st century needs. Designating it as an all-American road cannot disguise the reality that, absent leadership by the Commonwealth to protect an alternative route, U.S. 15 will become a major thoroughfare and render great harm to the heritage that the Journey Through Hallowed Ground group is trying to protect. As Mr. Harrison wrote more than a decade ago, the only certainty is the destruction of Route 15 if we do not act to protect and construct an alternative. And as Fleetwood Mac has implored us all, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Don't stop. It will soon be here. And if we don't act now to protect new corridors and the options that we need for future mobility, these options will not exist when we need them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chase.
Turning to the agenda itself, is there a motion to approve the October minutes?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
And action items 1, 2, and 3 under the maintenance division, Mr. Robbie Prezioso is here to answer any questions. Are there any questions on items 1, 2, or 3? If not, is there a motion on action item 1, the route naming of U.S. Route 156 over U.S. Route 360 in Hanover?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's my honor to move this action.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Is there a motion for the naming of the U.S. Route 33 over the South Anna River, also in Hanover County?
It is also my honor to move this motion as well.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And lastly, also in Hanover County, the naming of the U.S. Route 835 over I-95 in Hanover County.
With honor, I move this motion as well.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Excellent presentation, Mr. Prezioso. Action item 4 is a recreational access program in the city of Lynchburg. Are there any questions of Mr. Estes?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 5 and 6, we'll take them up separately, but these are the two resolutions that Ms. Wyatt made her Hallowed Ground presentation on. Is there any question regarding action item 5, the Virginia Byway designation in Albemarle and Charlottesville?
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And action item 6, which is the support for the All-American Road designation, is there a motion?
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Another outstanding presentation. The right-of-way division, Ms. Corder is here to answer any questions. And why don't I just ask in a block, are there any questions of action item 7, A, B, C, or D?
Move for approval.
Second.
Is that motion in a block?
Yes, please.
All right. And there's motion and second to take all four items up in a block. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The Department of Rail and Public Transportation, Mr. Page is here to answer any questions. We had a presentation last month on the Petersburg and the Nottoway County. Action item AA, 8A, City of Petersburg.
Move approval. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And the Nottoway County, action item 8B.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Page. These presentations are sparkling, aren't they? Action item 9, the construction bids received. Welcome, Mr. Coburn. Is this a good month or a bad month?
It's a very interesting time, sir.
Ooh.
Another secondary mistake. It's always a pleasure to be here. One of the interesting things that we're seeing is continued growth in our interest of contractors wanting to become pre-qualified in Virginia, many from out of state. So we're continuing to see four or five new firms each month. And as we go through that analysis process to verify that we would like them to be able to do business with us, it's an interesting time to check in with their counterparts in other states to determine what their histories are, et cetera. Today, I'm presenting two projects from our normal design bid build process. From the special letting on November the 5th, which were over $2 million. One of the winners is a new contractor from the state of Michigan. That process, we go through, we check with my counterpart in the state of Michigan. I spoke with the construction engineer specifically. This is one of the major bridge painting firms that works in your state. And an issue today is folks traveling further from home because there's not work at home, and so we're seeing that. We benefit some of that from our bid pricing. There's a lot of competition in the bid pricing that we're seeing right now. So it's a mixed signal.
Okay. Well, let's take up the primary ward in Gloucester County.
The first project is Route 17. This is safety improvements, signalization upgrades, raised median, and tying together some continuous right turn lanes for the approximately 1.3 miles from the toll booths to the north. You'll notice that we had 9 bidders interested in that project. Pretty good bids on that, and we recommend its approval.
So move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to abstain from that. Record show that I would abstain from that vote, please. Branscombe is on my board.
Okay. The record will reflect that. Page 2.
The next project is the Robert O. Norris Bridge. This is a painting project for two of the large sections of the bridge. The Norris Bridge is about a 2-mile-long bridge across the Rappahannock. There's a raised through truss during the center at the peak of the bridge. That part is not included in this bid. It's the portions of the bridge that are under the deck, the underdeck trusses, etc. So it's still a very significant amount of work. You notice we have 4 contractors. Phillips Brothers is the firm from Michigan that submitted a low bid. We're very confident it's a good bid and recommend its approval to you.
So move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Mr. Coburn, if I might just add, you mentioned the out-of-state contractors. And I'm sure there'll be a little bit of additional scrutiny on that. You might want to let the contractors know that the chairman of this body travels over that bridge frequently to visit his mother, and she is always asking questions about the quality of the work, so there'll be extra care and scrutiny here.
I'll be happy to indicate that there will be a significant scrutiny and inspection.
Page 3, please.
The next project is a HAMS project presented and processed by the Administrative Services Division. This is one of the turnkey asset projects from, this is 95 and 395 from the Hanover Caroline County line north to the river at D.C. 5-year term. The bid price at $25,689. This, I believe, and Robbie is here, completes that. Would this complete all of the tanage contracts?
Yes, sir.
This
one there, more? There are two more regular tanage contracts that we're in the process of either advertising or evaluating. And then there's a third piece that just goes through the local bridge.
And where are the other two that you mentioned, Ms. Prezioso?
The remaining ones are all in Northern Virginia. I-66, we have advertised and received proposals, and we're evaluating those proposals now. And likewise, we have advertised one for I-495, but we have not received the proposals yet. The Woodrow Wilson Bridge, we have not advertised yet.
Okay. And as I recall, when we first approved these TAMS contracts, there was a requirement from the board to establish some thresholds so that we can evaluate the cost effectiveness of outsourcing the interstate maintenance, that we have hit our targets. And I presume that these TAM contracts have that same baseline financial and effectiveness. So after a couple years of experience, we'll be able to say, has this been a good thing or a not so good thing?
Yes, sir. We're in the process right now. Many of the contracts have finished 1 year, and we do an annual evaluation of the asset conditions. So now that we've collected data for at least 1 year on most of these contracts, 2 years on a few of them, hopefully by the February meeting, we'll be able to compile that data and be able to show sort of a cost-benefit ratio and report back to the board.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Is there a motion for the 95-395 TAMS contract?
I move we approve, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the last, under new business, we do have a resolution for Donna Purcell-Mays. Sarah will pass out here momentarily. Let me read it for the benefit of those in the audience. I don't know if Donna saw, we can still embarrass her a little bit more. Whereas Donna Purcell-Mays began her career with VDOT in 1977, and whereas Donna has served with exemplary performance, patience, and dedication in every task from her first position as an editorial assistant to her time service as acting chief of communications, and whereas Donna made lasting contributions to VDOT and the Commonwealth by helping to create VDOT's award-winning publications, state and scenic roadmaps, work zone safety awareness campaigns, and VDOT's Adopt a Highway program. And whereas Donna has served as a teacher, mentor, leader, and consummate professional in all of her duties, and whereas she has been recognized for her contributions to public affairs, VDOT, and the National Transportation Ministry, and whereas during her 31-year career, Donna has consistently demonstrated a high level of achievement, now therefore, we, the Commonwealth Transportation Board, do hereby recognize and commend Donna Purcell-Mays for outstanding service to the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I call this observance to the attention of all our citizens. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
By acclamation, all in favor? Any opposed? Thank you very much. Any other items under new business?
Mr. Chairman, we've heard 3 meetings in a row that things are bad and they're getting worse. Our revenue is dropping off. We are talking about billions of dollars and who knows how many projects to be taken out of the plan. And I get a sense that we have more of a responsibility than to just sit back and say, well, that's the way it is. And I don't pretend to know what the right response is, but I'd like to suggest that the board ought to have a response. I think it's part of our responsibility to develop a transportation plan for the 21st century, and I would like to be in a position that when somebody asks me, well, what did the Commonwealth Transportation Board do about this, to be able to say, well, you know, we think you ought to do this, that, or the other thing. And in my case, I know, for example, we have 1,100-plus bridges that we're either going to have to close or severely restrict or eventually replace, that is going to cost billions of dollars that we don't have and have no prospect of getting as things continue to deteriorate. And it just seems to me we ought to have a response to say, well, what are you all going to do about that? And, for example, you've seen the price of gasoline fluctuate by $2 in the last few months alone. I'm not sure that anybody would have noticed a 5 or 10 cent increase in a gas tax along the way, and I know there are other ways. It doesn't have to be a gas tax, but the average Virginian today spends 26 cents a day on the gas tax. That's it. You can't even buy a cup of coffee for that. And it seems to me, whether it's the gas tax or a dozen other things, I would like to open the door to our recommending something to the governor and the assembly along the lines of, at the very least, a bridge fund to get us through the next few years that we could dedicate funds to something tangible, specific, and result-oriented. Plus, it would have the added advantage, along the lines of what Ms. Buescher suggested yesterday, that if indeed the federal government launches an infrastructure rebuilding initiative, we would have the cash available to match to the max every single federal dollar we can lay our hands on, which we've always had a good history of doing and which is now in jeopardy because of the way our revenue is falling off the cliff of late. So I don't have a specific motion exactly yet formulated, but with your indulgence, and I appreciate it, I'd just like to see if we might discuss it for a few minutes.
Sure. Folks have a little bit of time because this is a conversation of mushrooms, and I think that's an excellent suggestion. Let me just, if I might, set the table a little bit for this. We do have underway, as Ms. Connolly knows, the update of the five-year V-Trans process, and one of the things that we're trying to do in shaping that and beginning in January, that process will begin in earnest and probably replace some of the periodic briefings we had, for example, on subdivision street requirements, to have monthly briefings and discussions on V-Trans and various position papers on that. In years past, the underlying modal needs analysis, the race among the agencies has been to see who can get the biggest number. And there are many things in those plans that are unrealistic and unachievable, and the numbers are so large and so staggering, they actually discourage constructive solutions. So one of the things that I'm trying to see if we can, you know, work with the agencies and some of our particularly local government stakeholders is to start thinking about, well, okay, what are the 10 things that we absolutely need to do over that planning period, which is a different question than what's the unconstrained need. I think we have to be more discriminating. Bridges, obviously, would rise to that occasion. We're in an economic trough, so economic development, obviously, needs to be a component in that. We've heard about transit investments, and I think this body has an amazing record on transit and rail. That is not well recognized in the general public or in the General Assembly. So I think that's a process that will unfold over some period of time, and one that I think will be constructive and important. I think in the interim, because obviously the General Assembly comes to town in January, and if I'm reading your thoughts correctly, you'd like to try and frame at least something to feed into that process. And I think we have to respect, you know, the governor's prerogative, particularly when it comes to taxation, but he has been very open and aggressive about trying for 3 regular and 2 special sessions to come up with additional funding. I'd be interested if we could have a quick discussion around the table. Well, what kind of things? We have a December and a January meeting. We have a lot of business to do at those meetings, some tough decisions. But in addition to those items, what sort of things should we be trying to discuss? I do know I wish the commissioner was here, but his notion of, again, the functional classification didn't work. But when you look at our resources and our needs, there is a mismatch. And so one of the things I think he is trying to say is we have to focus on, obviously, we're going to continue to maintain but maybe we can't keep the existing system where every county, city, and town gets a direct allocation. That may not be an affordable option, as painful as that is to think about. Obviously, the revenue issues, you've talked about bridges. We heard earlier about the needs for transit. So with that understanding that we do have this longer-term B-Trans process, and Ms. Connolly chaired that last time around, we're going to take this into the full CTB in the coming calendar year. If there are things that we should be talking and thinking about, I think that would be a welcome discussion. And I know some people need to hit the road, but why don't we spend a little bit of time and Carol can keep some notes on this, and if there are things, my one concern with Ms. Buescher and her staff, she's cracking the whip. I want to be able to not create enormous amounts of staff analysis on that. But Mr. White.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with a lot of what Jerry just said. Matter of fact, almost all of it. The only part of it that I'm a little concerned about is coming up with something that has quality behind it between now and this session of the General Assembly. And maybe we should broaden it a little bit to include, I was intrigued by the discussion yesterday that followed Dr. Allen's presentation of how what the General Assembly had recommended just isn't going to work. But we discussed concepts like maybe there are 20,000 most important miles in the state. And we ought to concentrate on putting together a program, given the limited resources that we all know we're going to have, even if we get a one-time influx of money through this session of the General Assembly. I doubt if we will, but even if we did, with all the uncertainties at the federal level, not really knowing what the new administration is going to do in terms of public works projects, not really knowing what's going to happen at the state level with revenues that are available to us, that we ought to take a longer look at how we make sausage here in terms of creating a transportation plan, not only from the standpoint of highways, but transit and rail. And this body, given its current makeup, while many of us represent individual districts, I think we all pretty much have a statewide view of things. And it probably is easier for us to come up with a plan than it is for the General Assembly or a committee of the General Assembly to do so. They might not like the plan we come up with, but in terms of fulfilling our responsibilities and taking a leadership position, I think that's something that we ought to do right now, given we all recognize what the problem is, and we ought to step to the plate and try to figure out the solutions to it. So I would endorse what Mr. McCarthy has said, but I would like to see it expanded to include some of the things I've discussed and perhaps not put a January timeline on it.
Okay. Mr. Keene.
I think to add to what Mr. White is saying to some degree is that the awesome responsibility before us now is to communicate our present condition and reality check and see if we can have these public hearings on the reductions that's got to be made so that that can be a part of the information that people are taking to the General Assembly with them. I don't know what our time frames are, what our schedules are, but when we start talking about closing residences, that's going to have a major impact. And you know what we went through with area headquarters. And so that's one thing that's going to arouse a big part of the community. And in addition to that, when we start talking about taking, as we did in 2002, when we start talking about taking out Project out of the six-year plan, it arouses another group. I think it was something very important before us is get that information out, a reality check on where we are with official revenue estimates on what we can do even in this six-year plan. That doesn't take away from what Jerry is suggesting, but our immediate task is to communicate reality.
Mr. Witt?
I feel like I'm piling on here, but I do concur with what both Mr. McCarthy and Mr. White said. I think that everything that we do in our work sessions is important. The problem is that transportation in Virginia is at an acute crossroads, and I'm not sure that we are dealing with urgent issues as much as we should. Urgent in that many of the items we look at do have to come on the agenda the next day for action, and we need to know a little bit about it. But what is really urgent is the situation that we're in and what the solutions are going to be. I think over the course of the next year, not looking to this General Assembly session, but looking to the following General Assembly session, we should allocate a part of every work session for us to begin to go through a process of looking at all of these issues so that at the end, we are prepared as this board to make a comprehensive recommendation to the General Assembly as to how we think or what we think should happen with transportation going forward. We do represent all the regions of Virginia. We're fortunate enough not to be current elected officials that have to respond immediately to the constituents, but instead can take those interests and deal with it on a statewide basis, yet representing the area we come from. I think the state would be better served if this board spent its time looking at these issues, looking at how we're going to allocate between our different regions, determining with limited funding how in the world we're going to solve this bridge and other infrastructure issue, and then finally making some funding recommendations that fall under the category of being realistic and yet are targeted towards solving specific problems. So, again, I agree with my colleagues and think we need to focus more on those issues.
Mr. Chairman, I won't repeat anything, but I concur with a lot of what's been said, but I believe that there's another element that's missing that I'm not sure I have formulated a thought as to how we might dramatically improve it, but the transportation committees of the General Assembly and the CTB, as far as I've been on the board, have not had any major direct conversations. And there seems to be a disconnect there, at least from my position, with them understanding, in my view, the intensity and the severity of the problems that the Commonwealth's facing. And whether or not that would be productive, I think you and the governor perhaps need to consider seeing if these two bodies can't interact at some point so that there's a better understanding. I know when the governor comes and shares his priorities with us, it always heightens at least my perspective for what we need to be focusing on. And it really appears to me that those committees need to hear firsthand. They hear it indirectly, but it might be something worth considering.
That's a great idea. I do know just we've tried some of those in the past, and attendance has been spotty, as we know. Ms. Carter, did you want to?
Well, I cannot understand that a representative in Richmond, they call and they voice their concerns to our administrators in the districts on problems and what needs to be done. They're addressing these problems. And I cannot understand that some of them do not realize, that, or they should, that we don't have the funding to do what they're requesting. And so we do need a fly-in, yes. And when we speak about bridges, nothing would please me more than to say to the people who have so many concerns on the bridges, and especially the North Bridge. And I continue to work with our representatives in Congress to see if we can come up with a program. But, by gosh, it's a start at home also. And that, as I stated, I believe that that we should be heard more to our representatives in that I've come up with a plan that that we can say, we understand that we have these problems, you understand these problems, and that we list these problems and say, what are we going to do about it? And that this, that we take the initiative as CTB members to really go out and seek what we can and to concur that with them, yes, you've addressed this, but you're not addressing the funding. And what do we do? I just can't understand that. But however, that's it. And thank you, Mr. McCarthy, for bringing that up. I really believe that we need to take the initiative and a role in this.
Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly subscribe to the comments that have been made about perhaps using this as an opportunity to step back and look at some big picture prioritization. I think that would well serve the Commonwealth. I'll just throw another thought as well on the table, which is I think in addition to prioritization, we ought to take another look at what I'll call scoping and specking. I continue to harbor a concern that we are scoping projects in a way that doesn't necessarily serve the resource constraints that we're now facing, and specking specifications. We're specking projects similarly. This would relate not only to new construction, but also to maintenance and repair. I'm worried that we have learned over the years to build a good Cadillac or Lincoln Town Car, and we're doing it, but we're doing it and continuing to do it at a time when we need to be learning how to build Priuses, to use an analogy from the automobile industry. And there is a relearning and retooling. And that's not to say that the scopes and specifications that we've used in the past, and certainly we've often relied and looked to national engineering organizations and standards, and there's value and there's validity in that and the consistency that that brings. But it may be that this is a time where we really do have to go outside the box in terms of scoping and specifications and really challenge ourselves and challenge the department to look at introducing new types of efficiencies of design, of maintenance, and construction. I do think that at least some of the folks who have been reluctant to see the department have the funds for investment that I think all of us feel are absolutely necessary is at least partly because of this this issue and the concern that the result is that the value for the dollar is not perhaps what it could be given the world we're living in now. So I would just and I offer that not as a criticism but only as an exercise, frankly, that every good organization should challenge itself to constantly do, but particularly in these challenging times. It's a sort of a good to great, you know, kind of concept, but certainly one that that we ought to consider looking at it if we're going to address some big picture issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickin.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the risk of sounding like a broken record, our transportation system as we know it is not sustainable. The revenue streams, the way we're doing business has to change. I'd be interested in agreeing with my fellow members here of spending time with this body looking at ideas outside the box, looking at best practices, looking at what some of our folks are thinking, what outside folks are thinking, as to how we change this paradigm, how we look at transportation for the next century in a different way than we have in the past. Without belaboring the issue, I strongly support us spending that kind of time to do that. I don't know if we we can put something in front of the General Assembly in this next session, but we certainly ought to start having that conversation just for our own benefit and maybe for future sessions.
Again, if I think in the long term that the V-Trans planning process, I mean, that's a legislatively mandated, that's the perfect document. I think a lot of the questions as far, for example, bridges is so emblematic of where we are, and the closure of the Jordan Bridge, you know, is the heart, and we talked about the journey through hallowed ground. The original commercial enterprise in North America was on the south branch of the Elizabeth River. And we have shut down and are going to demolish one bridge there. We've cut in half the capacity of a second bridge. A tunnel crossing has been flooded once. Three out of the four crossings of that, you know, historic cradle of commerce have been severely compromised in recent years. That is, absent a change in course, that's the vision. Mr. Dates.
Mr. Chairman, I think we have a unique opportunity, and I want to echo the comment that was made that we make a mistake if we look solely at this coming session of the legislature. There is going to be increased visibility on state issues in 2009. We're not living in a political vacuum. One of our responsibilities ought to be to take the opportunity to raise issues related to transportation. And it's a unique opportunity, and it ought to be a bipartisan initiative to make sure that we get those who are the future governors of Virginia on board early on, committed to transportation initiatives. Part of the problem we've had is divided leadership. Whether or not people saw the tea leaves over the past several elections or not, I'm not sure. But I can tell you that they appear to be listening. They certainly saw this past election cycle. And I was interested in the AASHTO reports that came in that showed that bond issues related to transportation generally fared very well, especially those related to public transportation, that the public understands the importance and is willing to look at things differently. The other thing that concerns me is that as we go through this process, and if we focus on money, we're going to be focusing on money at a time that a number of other major concerns are going to have money issues as well. The one issue on which the General Assembly has always been able to coalesce and build consensus is education. Education is going to have critical needs. Education with cuts that are occurring in the college system, community college system, cuts that are going to occur at the local level are all going to put financial pressure on the localities to fund our public schools. That's going to shift the public discussion to a large extent to their needs. It is going to be a visible issue. If it's education versus transportation, if that occurs, then what we're going to see, I think, is the legislature retreat solely to the education issue. I think we have to look at it as a broader approach. The other thing that I think we can do and do effectively is that the people sitting in this room, all of us have our own individual contacts. We have people that we know who are on the transportation committees, who are on the finance and appropriation committees. We ought to have a coordinated plan. If we cannot get them to come to a meeting with us, then we need to go to them. If we're going to be successful advocates, I think it takes a different strategy in marketing, not only to the public, but to the decision makers that are there. So I think giving some thought to it over the next several months is extremely important, and our focus ought to be on 2009 through the year, rather than just this coming legislative session.
Thank you. Ms. Conley?
Thank you. I would agree, as both former legislators, that it's going to take a concerted and maybe a longer-term approach to get any fundamental change in the General Assembly. And I guess that brings me to, I'm thinking a little smaller than some of the rest of you, but coming from the urban area, I hope we continue this process that I think the presentation yesterday on emergency services brings out, is how to maximize the use of the existing capacity we have. And certainly that's important in our area. We are having some mega projects are going to be in progress. But I think we need to always keep the technology that we are now have available to us to improve our systems operations and also our transportation demand management programs. I want to be sure that they are used to the maximum extent so we can use the roadways and transitways to their get as much use out of them as we possibly can. And that same way in transportation demand management, I consider the increased use and support of public transit, whether trail or buses. So that's a little smaller idea, but it's how to use our existing funding as wisely as we can and getting the biggest bang for the buck. But in the big picture, I'm totally with everybody else in that we need to have a better approach and a more constrained fiscally. We need to recognize the realities of the next coming decade are going to be seriously different.
Mr. Billy?
I think I agree with everything I've heard this morning. I particularly agree with the notion that this board has a responsibility to voice its concerns and to come up with some proposals. I think we need a two-pronged approach. Certainly, we don't have enough time between now and the time the 09 General Assembly convenes to come up with a well-thought-out proposal for solutions. But I do think we have time to present an official communique from this organization, a 30,000-foot view of the greatest needs and the worst impacts that are going to come from the lack of resources in our infrastructure, and communicate that to the General Assembly and to the public. The second thing would then be to take a more longer process, more detailed view of some possible solutions. And we can't devote all of every work session to that, but certainly a portion of every session. Come up with some proposals that we can work on over a year's time and be ready for the 2010 General Assembly with some suggestions. And by that time, the VTRANS program will be advanced also. But I think we have a responsibility to come up with some solutions, or at least what we perceive to be solutions and what we would propose.
Mr. Martin?
You know, by the time you have such wise people before you do, you just hate to be saying yes. Me too. I agree with that. Essentially, going back to Mr. White and what he added on to Mr. McCarthy's original sentiments, I would concur with those. What they perhaps left out from my personal perspective. I think sometimes I know what prize fighters felt like when they boxed Muhammad Ali. It's like you come out in June, you cut a $1.1 billion, you know, you go back, ring the bell, you figure out, all right, I know how to deal with this now. You come back in August, you get another good whooping. Look it up in September, there's another $2 billion gone. It's like you know you got to get out of the box, but the box keeps getting bigger on you. And I would like to talk more about hows, but I just
had my brains beaten down to I'm right now can come up with what, but I got to work on how a little bit more. The getting out of the box. If you have a state where the majority in the House of Delegates is seriously considering cutting education, surely this is a state where we could consider the gas tax at the pump and indexed. We must have people smart enough to keep the pain away when it goes up too much and to still collect what we need when it goes down. The cliches flow and flow. But the reality is you have the excuse that it's too high, and then you have the excuse that people are not going to use it anymore, and none of it ever pans out for long. So it's like when you're in that boxing alley and you keep on doing the same thing, you know you're just going to get another good whipping. We need to depoliticize it. And if we can't depoliticize it, then this is a body that perhaps would be the one to put in the time, the effort, I know the talent is here, to come up with plans, alternate plans perhaps, offering several, that make sense, that would work, put them out there for the public, and be the ones to make the politicians have to say no or yes, we're going to do the right thing, but it's our heads that are on the chopping block for having taken the initiative and done the right thing.
Thank you, Dr. Davis.
Fine.
Thank you, Ms. Kuhlman.
And in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, you know, this morning reminded me a little bit of Dickens' A Christmas Carol. We had three people talk, one about how we maintain our present investments in transit, another who looked to the past, how do we save it, and a third who said if our future is going to be brighter, you know, we need to look ahead at alternative routes and corridors that we actually aren't using yet, but that we know we need. And I think probably, though, these are the most complex of times that we actually live them in a very simple way. I was impressed yesterday, for example, a presentation on snow and ice, that when it came down to it, there's a clear priority for what routes get plowed first, and that's the ones that are most heavily traveled. Well, see, out of all the complex formulas and funding and allocations, it's a simple principle of what are we attempting to accomplish and how we implement it. You know, a lot of that is lost because we're in a large and complex political process. But every process that's complex needs the straight talker, the direct talker, the one who keeps the decision that needs to be made in mind, who sticks to the facts, who punctures the illusions, who brings people back to reality. And I think that's what my colleagues are saying, is potentially the CTB can serve that function. We're more informed than a lot of people. We're less political than a lot of other people. We can leap tall buildings at a single bound. No, but what I mean is this group has a very business-like approach to what it does. It's a collaborative body. It's attempting to solve real problems, not simply spread the money around or see what might happen. And increasingly, especially going forward with our resource constraints, we are in real danger of spending a whole lot of money that we still have and actually not accomplishing system improvements. A project-by-project basis that has endless amount of resources can be, a system can be complete, but we know we don't have an endless amount of resources. I would suggest we're at a natural breaking point. When the commissioner talked about new construction will be episodic, that's the world just changed. That means things like maintenance and systems operations and other things are important. But it also means any construction that we undertake from this point on better be a part of a very comprehensive plan that everyone understands, or we'll have segments to nowhere and bridges that aren't the priorities and so forth. So I really think that this body, by getting back to some simple approaches, and I would commend DRPT for it, they've got one of the best approaches to this, and all of our mothers would recognize it, is don't start something that you're not going to finish. Well, that's an organizing principle that that's simple, that's direct, that this body can talk about. And puncturing the illusions of those in other parts of the process who think they can have everything they want without paying for it is another function that we can serve. In some ways, I think we can strengthen the governor's hand because some, as Ms. Mays would and communications people would tell you, there's just some people who can't hear what they don't already know. And what some people in the system already know is that if the governor says it, it can't be true, or it has to be wrong, or we can't do it. The CTB certainly is a part of the executive branch, but I don't think it's viewed directly as the same thing as the governor. So even the same idea that may come from this body might be easier to receive and be heard by those who have difficulty otherwise. But this is a time, to me, of staggering uncertainty, and as I mentioned yesterday, the responsibility that we have is something that we have to grasp, whether others in the process grasp their responsibilities or not. So I think we're on the right track. I think we're ready to talk more seriously about what we do going forward in a very changed process. And I think we can help give both the governor and the assembly good direction, good support, good advocacy in that regard.
Okay. Thank you. I think this has been a helpful discussion. And we had anticipated beginning in January to start ramping up sort of that B-Trans process, and I see Dr. Tischer back there has been taking notes. We can start that in December and have some open discussion, and I would encourage people to come with ideas. Some things process-wise that I would say, the notion of a joint meeting with transportation is one that we can certainly broach. That would, to get any kind of attendance, would have to be during a session. That is just so difficult, as you know, to achieve for a part-time legislature. The term bridges came up numerous times, and I think it is so emblematic of where we are. There is incredible work that has been done in the bridge division, and they have a statewide priority list of a very sophisticated calculus, as you might imagine, on that. That's pretty scary. I see the chief engineer hiding in the back. I don't know that there are price tags associated with those projects. Is there a price tag associated with those? And we're looking at a list of a couple hundred.
The only price tag we have, sir, is that I think I shared this before. I was here at the assembly. We looked at all the structurally deficient bridges that we had in the neighborhood of between 1700 and 1800. And if we were to replace all those, it'd be somewhere between $3 and $3.5 billion.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably in today's dollars, so when you get to reality, those numbers escalate pretty quickly. But I think it would be helpful to spend a chunk of time just looking at that. I view bridges as kind of like a pension fund manager. These are accrued liabilities that only grow with time.
Absolutely.
And we are accruing liabilities a whole lot faster than we're accruing assets. The notion of scopes and specs, I think, is one that's important to think about. The transition, for example, to the Rural Rustic Roads Program has been a rough one, and it has varied fairly dramatically among districts. And again, I think there are some important lessons there. The notion of what are immediate needs. And articulating that in a fairly short term. And so I think we ought to try and think about, again, December, perhaps in January, because we do have there is a January and February milestone with the General Assembly. I don't think we should say, well, let's only focus on a 12-month discussion. A lot of, obviously, discussion about revenues, and I know there is work very early stages at the state level and some at the federal level, for example, on a mileage-based fee. One of the things, while I was unable to attend most of the meetings, I was a member of the governor's climate change panel. And the single biggest bang for the buck to reduce mobile source greenhouse gas emissions is to encourage fleet turnover. The automobile industry has an interest in that. They would love to sell more fuel-efficient cars, and they'll sell anything right now. But as we saw with the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990, the federal standards can actually have a fairly quick turnaround. And so if the model all of a sudden is plug-in hybrids, it probably would be coupled with some federal tax incentives, probably some things we would need to do for set of signs for gas stations, you know, signs to charging outlets, for example. But that has very significant consequences for our largest source of revenue. So there are folks thinking about a mileage-based fee. There are discussions of beneficiary fees. I'm always, and I was so struck during this last session of the General Assembly, folks talking about there was no connection between transportation and real estate. We spent an awful lot of time talking about transportation and land use. As if Melissa Quarters here from Right-of-Way Division, a port, an airport, a highway, a bridge, a rail line, a bus stop creates that location, location, location. And that we, one of the things that we did not talk about in this round robin is land use. And we have to find a way to talk about that. And I think we too often talk at it at the micro level, but the macro level, the regional level planning, where that makes some sense. And understand that the decisions this body makes creates value and creates that location. And I think we need to factor that into as we think about revenue sources and beneficiaries. Instead of, we say it's a user fee, we need to be thinking about beneficiary fees. And let me give you a for example. I'm probably going to upset somebody somewhere. But where would the outdoor advertising industry be but for the system of highways? And are there other industries that are a creation of that system? And the same is true of aviation. The same is true of ports. The same is certainly true of metro stops. What about the rail stations that we're going to be investing in? Shouldn't we be asking those localities, whether it's Lynchburg or Charlottesville or Warrenton, if there's going to be passenger rail service, should there not be some kind of commitment, either financial or land use, that is complementary to those kinds of decisions? And Mr. Koulame serves on the Tysons Task Force. Look, we are putting $4.5 billion of construction to serve Tysons Corner. The Beltway Hotlines and Dulles Rail are, that's what that is about. I think there is an enormous credit due to the Fairfax Board of Supervisors. That is a very, as Ms. Connolly can tell you from our Arlington experience, and this is 10 times that, where we're actually making an infrastructure investment and the land use decisions that are built around that infrastructure are happening, and we should be calling out and praising and protecting those. I mean, those are real. We've got a lot of local elected officials, former and current, on this body. Those are very, very tough decisions, and we should be rewarding that. And then the last notion is to keep it simple. And I think that's something we can do as a body well. So what I would suggest, and Mary Lynn, we'll have to have some more conversations, but let's try and get, we can't do all of this at once, and we may need to accelerate some of the things that we were planning over the calendar year on V-Trans, but I think there's a rational selection of major topics specifically in December and January along these lines, and then some other ones that proceed a little bit longer time frame. Realistically, one would like to think that we're building up to 2010 and Butch's discussion about the statewide elections that will occur next year, but you never know what's going to happen in the legislative process, and I think we ignore that at our peril. So one of the things I would suggest, if for everybody to think about over the next 30 days, if the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker of the House and the Governor were to write us a joint letter and say, okay, we're going to solve one problem this session, what would it be and how much would it cost? We ought to think in those kinds of very, very simple terms as to what that is. And so we'll try and get a little bit of an agenda out. I would say, does everyone, and Mary Lynn, maybe you could send out a note to everyone. No dialogue. We don't allow dialogue on email. But if you have comments, Mary Lynn will send out. Do you have any ideas to send back to her for those discussions? And again, let's. I do think we have to think December, January, and then longer term we can get a schedule out by the time of the next CTB meeting. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was a wonderful response by you and everybody. Are we meeting one day, 2 days? Do we know that?
In December.
Mm-hmm. One day.
So, block out your calendars, and that starts at
December 17th at 12 o'clock, which is a Wednesday, not Thursday.
Okay, and we typically in January and February have one-day meetings also on Wednesday. So if you would allow some extra time for those discussions to occur, the reason for that is those first two Thursdays are when the Transportation Appropriations Subcommittee and the two Substantive Transportation Committees meet. And so all of the agencies, Secretary's Office, were all over there testifying, answering questions. So we just try and avoid those conflicts. Okay, is there any other new business come before the board? I want to thank you. Everybody, please drive safely and have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Meeting's adjourned.